When I say passion, what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Kim?
Anger plus love is acting for me.
Did you ever have a time where you wanted to just stop and give up?
Yes. I was like, forget this. I'm like, I'm just going to disappear into the corporate world. I'm done. And then...
Welcome to the Pisa Noel Show, hashtag PNS, season 3. All right, now, the theme is finding, pursuing, and keeping passion alive. Enjoy.
Hi, my Pisa Noel Show passion propellers and bold beauties. I'm Pisa Noel, of course, and I have my amazing actress, singer, musician, everything that you can think of, like one of the most well-rounded, talented people that I know. Kim is here today. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Pisa. How are you?
I'm so happy to have you here, and I'm so happy to do this. So thank you.
I am happy to be here. It's so great to connect with you.
Yes. So I've mentioned on some of the episodes that my mom has known some of these guests. So she knew Kim and she was Kim's number one fan. I know she's smiling from above right now. Thank you from me and my mom for showing up.
I was your mom's number one fan too. I still am. God bless her. I miss her so much. And I know she is so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. Same with you. I just keep seeing all the accolades, which we're going to get into. Let me not spoil anything, but I'm super proud and always inspired by you. Just want to let you know that. So, of course, on the Pisa Noel Show, we talk all things passion, and we're talking about keeping passion in your life, no matter if it's a new passion, an old passion, whatever. I think is so necessary to have passion in your life so we can just thrive and live and have joy in our life. So when I say passion and keeping passion alive, what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Kim?
Anger plus love. That's what passion is to me, because in order to be angry, you got to get some juices flowing, right?
Yes.
And if you combine that with the utmost love, you've got something that could blow the top off of a pot. It's just, that's what keeps our life force going.
Oh man, I've never heard it put that way, but that's brilliant. Yes.
Thank you. I didn't make it up. I got it from someone else and I thought it was brilliant too. So
yes, I love
that. That was exactly how I feel. Fred Astaire, when he saw Michael Jackson dance for the first time, he called him up and he said, "Man, I like your style. You're an angry dancer like me." Because they always threw fire into their movements. And that's one of the things they had in common. So yeah, I tend to agree with whoever said it. Passion is anger plus love.
When I think about anger and love, I think about the frustration that can come with passion. And then that makes you move further. And then you love it, but you hate it. Like, I don't know, my relationship with dance was always hate, love, anger, love again, you know? So that's what I thought of it in that way. But I also like the way that you explained it.
Well, I think that's where the term crime of passion comes from.
Yes.
Because sometimes we hurt the people we love the most. And man, some of these crimes of passion, they were truly in love with the person. I guess they just had a funny way of expressing it.
Yeah, I'm cool off of that. Hope I don't meet nobody like that.
me too. Me too.
So what's the first passion that you want to discuss?
Oh my God. Should we talk about the new passion or the old passion?
Let's talk about the old one first that you keep alive.
The old one is acting for me. It's acting. Ever since I was 6 years old, I've been a producer. I was the dumb little kid walking up and down the street with a poster board and a wig saying, "Hey kids, let's put on a show. Let's do a show. You be Cleopatra. And can we use your grandmother's card table? And you got a sheet. Does she have a sheet that doesn't have flowers on it so we can use it for a backdrop? And then I can ask my mom if we can go up under the carport and then we can have some lights and blah." I was that kid. Yeah.
You really were putting on the real show.
I just knew I was doing something.
Oh, you were. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
At 6 years old already, right?
6 years old. I was the one wanting to put things together. I had all the ideas.
I would have thought that you were going to say singing first. It's really cool to hear that acting is your first passion, and now seeing all the stuff you get to do with acting.
Yeah, because I didn't start singing until I was 18.
What?
I didn't start singing until I got in college.
Oh man.
So yeah, acting and putting on shows was first, and playing the violin, of course. I started that when I was 7, but and started piano when I was 6. But yeah, I mean, just putting on shows and acting them out has always been my passion. And to this day, that's the part I love. You know, some people hate auditioning. I love auditioning because I feel like it gives you a chance to perform. I have this audition for this television show that just won an Emmy. I mean, it's not an Emmy. It has won 3 Emmys, actually, but it just won a Critics' Choice Award. And I have an audition for it tomorrow. And I am so digging getting into this character and discovering things about this character and making some stuff up. Going by what the script says, you go by what it gives you, and you keep digging and digging and digging. Well, why did she say that? Well, why would she say, what's going on in her life to make her say that? How would she say it? Or if she would say it like this, what would have to happen to make her say it like that? There's just a whole can of worms in every sentence. I just love it.
Yes, that's a real deal actress that like loves doing the auditions and loves every part of it. That's how you can tell who's really passionate about it, because it should be fun. When I hear you say that, I'm like, yeah, it shouldn't be like, yeah, oh, we gotta do this again. It should be fun and you should enjoy all those parts of it, you know?
That does. I love like the process. Playground of it.
Yeah. What was your journey like? What was your journey getting to LA?
Well, I started doing theater when I was in Memphis, which is where I was born. And I just did so much theater every chance I got, from the time I was 8 years old to, I don't know, when I left Memphis. I was grown when I left. Mm-hmm. And I was like in my 20s. I went from there and I moved to the Twin Cities. I moved to Minneapolis, because the national tour of Ain't Misbehavin' was based out of that city. And I did that tour for 2 years. And then I just decided to stay in Minneapolis for a while. It was doing well for me and I formed my own band. I had a great time while I was there. It was just cold.
Yeah.
And then I decided, after I had performed on just about every stage in Minneapolis and St. Paul, that it was time to go. Like they say, it was time to launch some big ships, and I had to go where the water was deeper. So I drove out here with my best friend and her sister. It was like Thelma and Louise and Louise. Oh my God, we were rugged and rough and dirty, and we spent 5 days on the road pulling a U-Haul. Pulling my car behind it, drove through a rainstorm, drove through a tornado, 200 miles on a flat, got to California and started hugging and kissing palm trees. It was just hilarious. And we did a journal on the way. It was great. We didn't even know we were driving through a tornado.
Oh.
We just thought it was like heavy rain. So you know what they say, God protects fools and babies. And we were just on the road, just doing our thing. Oh. And I got to LA with $16. And I had 2 agents when I came here. So I thought, I can get it going. This is going to be great. Lost my 2 agents as soon as I got here.
Oh.
And everything started falling apart. And it was actually 10 years. I was living in LA about 10 years, just pounding the pavement, singing everywhere I could. I decided I was going to go to a bar or some kind of restaurant that had live music every night. I was just going to find one and just go and ask them if I could sing a song. Because I knew once I got my voice out there, I would start to get known like I did in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 10 years of pounding the pavement, beating the bushes. Before I found, and actually he found me, my agent found me. And I had tried to get another agent after I lost those first 2. I tried. And then I finally just gave up. And one day this guy called me and said, I'd like to meet with you. Well, his wife called, because she was the secretary. She ran the office. And she said, we wondered if you could come in for a meeting. I went in for that meeting and they had a headshot of me.
Wow.
That I had not seen in years. I don't know where they got that headshot from.
What?
I have no idea to this day. It was a headshot I didn't even use anymore. And I'm like, I wonder how they got that, but I didn't dare ask because, you know, there were more important questions to be asked at that time. And she interviewed me first and gave me the okay to meet him. And then he said, wow, your confidence blows me away. I don't understand why you're not working all the time. I was like, whoa, is this easy? Not really. But, you know when the divine is opening doors for you. Mm-hmm. Because things just go, here, Kim, just walk right on through. Oh, here, Miss Paisa Noel, let's open the door for you. Here's your red carpet. Would you like some tea? You know, it's just like, it's easy when spirit is involved and the divine is involved. And I think that's exactly what happened. Otherwise, how did they get my resume? I don't know. I booked the very first audition I went on as a TV audition. Do you remember the show called Till Death?
I've seen that. I've seen the title, but not the show.
I booked that show. That was the very first audition I had, and I booked it. And then they wrote me out of the script.
Oh.
So then I didn't book anything for the next year and a half. And then I started booking like crazy, like back-to-back-to-back TV shows.
And what year was that? What year did it start picking up? How long?
2009. My first speaking role on television was on Bones.
I remember that.
2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when we were like doing those dance classes together, right?
I can't remember the year, but it sounds about right.
Yeah, I was singing for the dance studio and you were one of the dancers. One of the star dancers.
Oh, he used to work me. Whew. I'm still tired thinking about how he would work me. I was like, whoa, this too much.
He worked us too.
But I got good, so, you know. So when we met, you had already been here about 10 years?
Yep, I came in the year 2000 because I decided that the year 2000 was not going to catch me still in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to experience the turn of the century in the Twin Cities. So I think I left maybe November 30th mm-hmm. of 1999.
So you're thinking for 2000.
Yeah.
Well, you did it. Whatever you said, you did.
Yep.
Another question. I want to know what your most challenging moment was when it came to the acting and the auditioning.
You know, somehow I always get put in the parts opposite an A-lister, having to do a scene with an A-lister. And I've never been starstruck, but this particular time when I did a role on Dexter, there was this movie that came out in the 80s called RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
And the star of that movie, his name was Peter Weller. And I had to do a scene with Peter Weller on Dexter. I had never seen somebody with eyes that piercing in my life.
Wow.
It's almost like his eyes weren't even real. They were so blue and they were like metal, just kind of looking right through you. And normally they want to hire people that can go toe to toe with a celebrity and you're not going to freak out, right? Because mm-hmm. you not only got to stay in character and you got to remember your lines, but you can't go, oh my God, it's Steve Harvey. I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
They will fire you and go next.
Yeah.
So thank goodness I've never been starstruck like that. But Peter Weller kind of caught me off guard. He was really nice, nicest guy ever. His trailer was next to mine. And I gave him a copy of my CD. He introduced me to his wife. Really nice guy. But when we got to that scene and he looked at me, I was like, remember your lines. Because he just stared right through me. And I'm like,
those nice eyes. Ooh.
They were not just nice. They're scary eyes.
Oh.
They're scary blue. Go back and watch RoboCop. You'll see what I mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, if his eyes come across like that on camera, can you imagine what they're like in person? It was almost like he was hypnotizing me. You know, good actors don't blink.
Oh,
they
don't blink.
Okay. No, they hold their gaze. If you watch a lot of these actors, especially movie stars, they got an intense scene going on. They got a close up. They don't blink. They don't look away because it makes it more intense.
I'd be nervous thinking about it and mess around and blink like a thousand times. Woo, I didn't know that. So did you make it through though?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Oh, that sounds tough.
It was tough. I almost like forgot everything I knew.
Oh man. So when it comes to your acting and this whole time of auditioning and everything else, did you ever have a time where you wanted to just stop and give up?
Yes. Yes. Sometimes actors have what they call dry spells. There's nothing happening. And I had a dry spell in the Twin Cities, probably about the last year and a half. And then things started to kick off again before I left and moved here. And then when I got here, the first 4 years were really hard. And by 2003, I was like, forget this. I'm done. I was working as a legal secretary on the side. I'm like, I'm just going to do that and disappear into the corporate world. I'm done. I'm tired of fighting. God gave me some gifts and I'm tired of trying to force them on people. Yeah. If they don't want to hear me sing, that's fine. Good. I'm just going to go to my office and tap on my computer and I work for the attorneys that I work for and just keep my mouth shut. I'm done. And then I went to see the movie Chicago. And I'm just sitting there, just, and I can't quit. I can't quit. This is too wonderful. And of course, Chicago won the Oscar that year. It won the Oscar in 2004. And watching that movie saved my career. If I ever meet anybody that was in that movie, I will be glad to tell them, you know, you saved my life, right?
Oh, man.
Because I didn't have a plan B. I didn't have a backup plan. I just came out here because Eddie Murphy said, don't have a backup plan. So I didn't.
But you fell into a good job, though, it sounds like, if you were working for the attorneys.
It was a good job, but it was a tough job. I worked for Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, wow.
The Devil Wears Prada times 10. I call her the dragon lady.
So were you ever trying to do both? What happened to just get you out of that whole thing?
Yeah, I was trying to do both. I think I had been at the law firm about 4 years and I had survived 3 rounds of layoffs. It went from 200 people to 100. We were so overworked because they had let everybody go. And it was very stressful. It was a lot more stressful. So then one day they decide, well, Kimberly, things have changed at the firm and we can't do things the way we used to. So we're going to get you to sign this letter saying that you won't go on any more auditions during your lunch. You have to take your lunch with everybody else and you won't be able to do things like we have been doing them. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to sign this memo. I laughed in their face. I pushed that memo back across the table. I said, you know I can't sign that.
Oh my gosh. No, they didn't.
Sign that. No.
You talked to them and told them what you was going to do first. And they still thought you were going to.
Did I stutter?
Right. And you laughed at him?
I laughed out loud. Just like I was being interviewed by a lady last week. And she said, okay, so what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm an actor. And she said, no, but what's your steady job? And I said, that is my steady. And I laughed so loud. I couldn't get my composure. And finally, I said, that is my steady job. After I just howled laughing. And she went, okay. I don't think she believed me.
Because a lot of people can't do it like that. But, you know, being in L.A., does she live in L.A.?
Yeah, some it people have this weird concept that if I'm sitting here talking to you, you couldn't be on television at the same time. There was one law firm I was working at when I was temping, and I told my boss that I had to take a couple of days off the following week because I was going to be in a movie with Julia Roberts. And she said, "What do you mean, Julia Roberts? In a movie with Julia Roberts?" It's like her brain disconnected and exploded. And I said, "Yeah." She's like, "What does that mean? I don't understand. What are you talking about? What is it?" I said, "I am going to be in a movie with Julia Roberts. And I have to take some days off next week, maybe 2 days." And she was like, "Okay, whatever." And then she turned around and kept typing.
Yeah, it's just like over their head for some of them.
Yeah, they just can't.
That's crazy.
They can't grasp it. When you're making money at it, you're a working actor and it's your major source of income, you're not going to lie about it.
Right.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you. This is what I do.
Yeah.
What do you want me to say?
Some people are real small-minded though. They just don't get it. So
stay tuned for part 2 of Kim Yarbrough on the Paisa Noel Show.